WWE 24/7 presents This Week in Wrestling History. Just 2 days after one of the darkest days in American history, over 12,000 people packed the Compaq Center in Houston for a special live episode of SmackDown.
Tonight, the spirit of America lives.
I've been avoiding getting too close to temporal ground zero. This project is about the post 9/11 era, not 9/11 itself. It can't be. I wouldn't be able to deal with it. And why would you want to? This podcast is about memory and history, but also their limits. Remembering September 11th can't be an excuse to forget what happened afterward. And so not going beyond that morning, which is what most reminiscences and narratives do, just going back to it without going back and then forward, seems to me to be almost irresponsible. And what you really should do is go back before as well. For 12 years, we've been instructed to never forget. And I want to take that seriously and literally, and I want to remember not just the narrative that's given to us, or its most resonant event, but also what happened afterwards, what happens now. At this point, the arc of an American tragedy is fixed in our heads, and we could all be dapper morticians presiding over strangers' wakes. We've been through all of it together, in careful order so many times, the first rumors, the initial confusion, false reports, all the way to the aftermath and the stadia, the patriotic songs, the patches, tributes, and funds, the acronyms and dates, and the pledges to never forget. Whether New Orleans or Boston, Tucson or Aurora, Sandy Hook or Oak Creek, Wisconsin. They blend in with each other because their memorialization has been by and large the same. The individuality of the victims and acts fades into an obscured uniformity in our accepted cultural process of memorializing. When instructed to never forget, we forget the specifics. And what lasts are ceremony and pageantry, empty shells of real feeling. So I'm not going to go there today. But we're going to get pretty close, though, so trigger warning in that we're going to go right into September and October, the fall of 2001. It was like we'd become a nation of bewildered relatives at an endless series of wakes, guided to our places by gliding funeral directors, half-smiling, competent, by the book. Survivors over here, families here, music coming down from somewhere, cops all in a line. Greeting people at the door, flowers and cards, standing and then not standing, solemn words floating in the air, leaves drifting down into the street.
Oh, it's so hard to remember.
Welcome to Never Forget Radio, where, from the comfort of your own home or your device, and from the safety of the future, we can revisit the memory of 9/11, of George W. Bush, and of all the years associated with both since. It's been over a decade of disappointment, failure, and disaster. I'm no expert, but I'll be your host as we explore our recent past and try to reclaim it. Let's roll. It wasn't just September 11th by itself that got us to where we are now. The building of the institutions of memory was not an organic process. Somehow, random and personal attempts, like the walls of handmade flyers in Lower Manhattan, were narrowed and boxed into institutional patterns. What we have now was established and codified in the new territory, after the 11th, in the fall, when all actions, personal and institutional, were subject to heightened scrutiny and emotion, and every move was the new tradition. One idea that undergirds this project has always been that 9/11 itself wasn't the beginning of what we understand as the post-9/11 era. I've always believed that there was this ahistorical emotional bubble right afterwards. I opened this project with an invocation of this in the first episode. But now I'm not so sure, and maybe it's a fallacy to think that there was this tiny moment where it was possible that the wars and domestic repressions could have been averted, that the spirit by which thousands of people donated blood and citizens all over the world had so much sympathy could have been harnessed for good, or at least for less bad. And I want to believe in this bubble, even though it's probably a fallacy. Donating blood, for example, it made people feel like they were helping and doing the right thing, but a lot of it had to be thrown away. There's no point in bringing blood to a wake. Like everything else about 9/11, this concept has been commercialized and exploited. So I might be pushing a manipulative agenda, too, by lamenting that we've fallen from the hopeful heights of bubble time. 9/12 is a much better term, but Glenn Beck has already taken it. We can be bubblers. And it's within that framework that I'd like to introduce a new series to Never Forget Radio, in the vein of our series Empty Sky Rising, which examines memorials. This new series will examine sports in the bubble and the subsequent post-9/11 era. How sports stood beside us and guided us through the night with the light from above. Stadium floodlights tend to simplify and homogenize tragedy and change its meaning with their overwhelming attention. For example, Major League Baseball, which will be the subject of several episodes in the series A Light from Above, they shut down for 6 days. Games resumed nationwide on the 17th, and the first major sports game in New York was played on the 21st at Shea Stadium. Today we're going to look at a unique and representative American institution, hyper-masculine, homoerotic hybrid of violent action sports, corporate concerts, and reality television, which suspended its scheduled taping on the 11th and returned 2 days later. So there's a bubble, bubblers. 2 days, 6 days, 10 days between the 11th and when institutions started to reopen. What was happening in those few days? What was happening was that people were shocked and didn't know what they were going to do. But people in charge, even of little things, they were working. These people were shocked and confused and frightened too, but responses were needed. In the bubble between a death and a wake, one way you can fight grief is with logistics. So the institutions went to work. I don't mean to just paint a picture of people sitting around conference tables shaping organizational responses to 9/11, shaping their and our future, self-consciously forging a new and ongoing historical era out of the minutes of a few crisis meetings. Although there must have been a few nihilistic innovators draping our world in red, white, and blue, the dons of Madison Avenue ready to seize the day and sell us ribbons and home security systems and overseas wars. But I don't think that most responses were by canny profiteers or propagandists. When you walk into a funeral home, you give some control over your grief over to experienced professionals and to the audience of other mourners. And what you get is competent sympathy and especially the relief of giving that control away. But this signing over of responsibility is one of the reasons things have changed quite a lot from the fall. Whether the bubble was real or not, over a decade later, from the mountains to the prairies to the oceans white with foam, 9/11's become a rhetorical bludgeon for conservatives, the justification for the government's endless dirty wars and dystopian data aggregation, and almost an annual holiday for the deification of the police. How did we get here? The first sporting event to reopen, only 2 days after 9/11, was the WWF SmackDown. But don't listen to me. Let's let CEO and spokesman Vince McMahon introduce it.
Tonight, the spirit of America lives here in Houston, Texas. Our nation's leaders have encouraged us to return to living our lives the way we normally do. Our nation's leaders have encouraged us to continue to live our lives the American way. Make no mistake, and make no mistake about the message this public assembly is sending to terrorism tonight.
Now, it would be very easy to make fun of this hyper-masculine man, McMahon, or the wrestling fans, but if conventional memorializers have made 9/11 into a product, detached ironists have only made it into a punchline. Neither is the right tone for a wake. I think we can do better. And really nothing McMahon says is as over the top as that 10th anniversary tribute I played at the beginning. All that separates his speech from any boilerplate institutional remembrance is that cartoon inflection. And that his message of sympathy and pride was followed by men in tights hitting each other with folding chairs. And that there were no troops to support yet. There's a bubble bubbler.
The citizens of Houston are not afraid. The citizens of Texas are indeed not afraid. And by God, the citizens of the United States are not afraid.
And one thing this Dubian demagogue says is true, that even in Houston, attending an event in the fall was a brave act. There was no certainty that there wouldn't be more attacks, and if there were, most likely they would have been against places where there were a lot of people.
And we will fight.
And that legitimates McMahon's assurances to the audience, and to himself, that they're not afraid.
We would like to extend our condolences to the victims and the families and friends of the victims of the terrorist acts that occurred on Tuesday.
None of the referential signs, 9/11, September 11th, 9/11, had been permanently codified yet. McMahon and several of the wrestlers, in recorded out-of-character statements, continually use the much more meaningful and poetic term Tuesday. That's how soon it was, how raw, and that closeness justifies almost any response. On September 13th, fear and patriotism and even anger and yearning for revenge were understandable feelings, and I honestly can say, not ironically, that Vince McMahon really was speaking that day for most Americans. But that was 2 days later. Unfortunately, 12 years later, we still remember Tuesday through the largely unexamined precedents set by this event and others later in the fall.
For we are a proud people, proud of who we are, proud of our nation, and damn proud to be Americans.
And consider that this was the first, or one of the first, major cultural institutions to respond to September 11th. McMahon was and is the very visible CEO of the WWF, now rebranded WWE. And so in the speech we just heard, he can literally be said to have been speaking for a major cultural institution, which straddles television, spectacle, and sport. And though it's usually an ignored punchline or excused guilty pleasure, it is an institution, as Suit Jolly and Jackson Katz argue in Wrestling with Masculinity, that cannot be laughed off, which presents a culture of bullying, homophobia, violence against women, and sometimes lethal steroid use without televised consequences to millions of young men whose real attitudes are influenced by its fake codes. And this horrifying overgrown vision of the American id also seems to have had a part in shaping the post-9/11 world in its own image, from this immediate response to its annual performances for soldiers, and of course in 2004 and 5, it continued its long history of racially stereotypical villains with the character Muhammad Hassan, played by an Italian-American in Arab face for people to boo and chant USA, USA at. The WWE is so influential in the post-9/11 world that the presidential candidates filmed exclusive campaign ads for it in 2008.
Hi, I'm Hillary Clinton, but tonight, in honor of the WWE, you can call me Hillrod. This election is starting to feel a lot like King of the Ring. The only difference, the last man standing may just be a woman.
So to the special interests who've been setting the agenda in Washington for too long, I've got one question. Do you smell what Barack is cooking?
Let me give you a little straight talk, WWE fans. You want to pull out of Iraq? Well, I say no surrender. America can win the war against terror. I'm going to introduce Osama bin Laden to the Undertaker. Can you smell what the Mac is cooking?
You can ignore the significance of the things you make fun of. Performative masculinity, obligatory group remembrance, professional wrestling. But they're not going to go away.
You see, my friends, we watch WWE because wrestling is about celebrating our freedom. It's about fighting to be the very best.
And so tonight, and probably for many nights still to come, the spirit of America lives in Houston, Texas, on September 13th, 2001. It seems like we're still stuck there.
This memorable episode of SmackDown was a small early step on a national road to recovery. One that we are still traveling down to this very day.
We're going to hear those chants again in our next episode. And you'll probably hear them at public events for the rest of your life. Because maybe we haven't fallen from any heights, as much as slipped back into unexamined ceremony, patriotic and militarist pageantry, waiting for us in the traditions of sports entertainment. So if 9/11 was initially commemorated by a series of well-meaning wakes, it seems like the way we officially memorialize it now in public events and discourse is with military funerals, cops and bagpipers, sacrifice and duty, honor and God. But the majority of victims and their families were not cops or soldiers or firefighters. They died randomly, narrativeless, and so they're a lot harder to remember.
Never Forget Radio is a production of Bookstyle Publications, currently located in West Philadelphia. Music for this episode was provided by Old Table. Special thanks to Corey Bichelli and Sammy Schuster for their expert advice on professional wrestling, and Muffin and Gatsby for editing. Portions of historical footage were commented on for a non-profit educational purpose. Its fair use does not harm the potential market or value of the copyrighted work. Never Forget Radio would like to personally apologize to John McCain. All of our episodes can be downloaded for free, but please feel free to donate any amount. You can find us at Never Forget Radio on iTunes, Facebook, Gmail, Bandcamp, or Tumblr, or Never Forget Pod on Twitter. We've heard from Bar Rock and the Mac. Now let's smell what the Rock is cooking.
Difficult to talk about this, and I will say that I couldn't imagine what it must be like to be there. I couldn't imagine if my own family were there. I will offer my condolences and certainly say that everyone is in my heart and in my prayers.
You probably thought that was going to be a joke, but all feelings are welcome at Awake. Thank you, and never forget.